All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly historical revisionist magazine. Please do subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this evening. Don Jeffries is joining us once again. Don is a well-respected author and journalist who also contributes to American Free Press. Don, welcome back to the program, sir. How are you this evening?
Fine. Thanks for having me again, John.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. The last time you were on, I believe it was actually the day after the 2020 election. And at that point, it was still very much up in the air, still very much contested. It still is to a certain extent, although it's becoming increasingly less and less likely, in my view, that Trump is actually going to get a second term. I'm sure you heard the news. There have been the Michigan Supreme Court and a number of other states, Pennsylvania and other states, have basically thrown out a number of lawsuits brought by the Trump team or by I believe even like Republican operatives within the state. So he's really hasn't been able to gain any traction from a legal sense. And the big news was just last Friday, the United States Supreme Court rejected a Texas election lawsuit. And Texas was joined by a number of other states, including many of the swing states that Trump ended up losing, apparently. At least according to the official numbers and, of course, the mainstream mass media. And just to kind of give readers a brief overview, I'm looking at an article here from the Epoch Times that was published last Friday. Supreme Court rejects Texas election lawsuit. I'll just read a couple paragraphs here real quick. The U.S. Supreme Court on Friday rejected Texas's bid to challenge the 2020 election results in four battleground states. In an order, the justices denied Texas's request to sue Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin, opining that the Lone Star State lacked legal standing or capability to sue under the Constitution because it has not shown a valid interest to intervene in how other states handle their elections. Texas has not demonstrated a judicially cognizable interest in the manner in which another state conducts its elections, the order read. All other pending motions are dismissed as moot. So basically, the U.S. Supreme Court, including three justices that President Trump himself appointed and were confirmed by the Senate, threw out this lawsuit, which many people were, you know, basically, you know, putting all their eggs in this basket, thinking that this would be, you know, potentially game-changing. And it looks like the Supreme Court is just going to throw it out. So, Don, where does Trump stand at this point? What can he do, if anything?
It looks like he's running. What do they call it? Pass to victory. I don't see. I said before that I thought the Supreme Court was his only chance, but my guess was that Amy Coney Barrett would actually do what she did in the pre-election case that was taken there when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court just incomprehensibly ruled that the mail-in ballots didn't have to be dated and they would just assume that they got them before election day, which opened the door to this all kinds of corruption. I mean, it was one of the most brain-dead decisions I've heard that a Supreme Court of a state could make something like this. Just tells you, exemplifies the sad situation we're in. And of course, the Trump campaign took it to this U.S. Supreme Court. And Amy Coney Barrett recused herself and allowed it to be a 4-4 split. And so the rule went on. And that's probably one great reason why Pennsylvania was such a disaster, because who knows how many mail-in ballots that were undated came in whenever. And they just assumed, well, we're going to assume because the Supreme Court said that they got in here before Election Day. So when she did that, I realized, you know, that, well, I knew that anyhow, but I was a little surprised that they didn't at least that the other two judges, or even heard that they would at least hear the Texas case. I thought that was pretty amazing, and I'm sure Trump and they were disappointed as well. But you know, this is kind of Trump 101. And now, John, what you get is I'm hearing over and over again, it's all Q stuff. It's all still Q logic, where they're running out of time. I mean, this is winding down really quickly. And the latest theory is that there's some kind of an emergency executive order that he's either implemented it or, you know, or something, or still under it. I don't even understand it. And that this is going to save him because they can overturn everything. And it's very Q-ish. And he has till January 10th to do it or whatever. I mean, I just it sounds to me like what we have heard for 4 years, that, you know, about the imminent arrest and the sealed indictments and all that nonsense. And what happened? The entire time in 4 years, the only people that got prosecuted by his Justice Department were people like Roger Stone and General Flynn and Paul Manafort. Not one single enemy anywhere of his political opponents, certainly not Hillary Clinton or any big fish like that, but no one was prosecuted. And I think that's the big joke. And then the idea, I mean, I saw, you know, some of his cult members were still cheering on the fact that Barr is finally gone. It's like, well, is he going to bring another attorney general in now that's going to, you think, is going to issue a bunch of indictments at the very end of his term? I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, they're talking about if Biden's attorney general will probably be Andrew Cuomo, you know, one of the absolute worst choices imaginable, but that'll be his entire cabinet. And, you know, can you imagine whatever happens? I don't know how that would work if, you know, a sitting president launches a probe like that with a special prosecutor right at the end of his administration. I don't know how it works, but I sense that they can probably quash that when they get in. But I don't know. I'm not very confident about it. And, you know, the other thing they're doing is you have people now that are rooting for martial law, rooting for the military. And this is, you know, this is very troublesome. First of all, no one should ever want martial law to be declared, because it doesn't matter if this was, you know, George Washington, whoever, the greatest statesman you could think of. It's a slippery slope, because then you never come up. We still need to stay on it a little bit longer. You know, you don't want to do that. And to invoke the military, as I said, I don't think the military, first of all, if Trump tried that, I don't think the military is loyal to him. Maybe the troops are, but the brass isn't. I mean, he's 2 months ago, he issued those great statements, which were wonderful, like most of his rhetoric is, condemning the military-industrial complex. So I don't think those guys are very favorably disposed to him. So I don't know what is there for him at this point, but he seems to have lost everything. I don't even know how it can get to the Supreme Court at this point. But if it does, as I said before, I don't think they have the balls to overturn something like that, especially the Amy Coney Barrett, who has 7 kids. They're all small. And I don't think she wants to go through a Linda Tripp moment where she's just raked through them all as the arch villainous of all times. And you know that's what will happen to her. If that was the case and somehow the Supreme Court flipped it to him and she was the deciding vote, she would be, you know, another Benedict Arnold in the eyes of the state-controlled media.
Yes, yeah. You know what? I tend to agree with you. And I'm glad you brought up QAnon. I do want to get into QAnon here in just a moment. But let me just say that, you know, at following the election, you know, Trump was out there saying it was, you know, it was stolen, there was fraud, there was voter fraud, there were ballot dumps. And there does appear to be all sorts of very legitimate evidence of, you know, voter fraud, of Absolutely. Very questionable, just statistical anomalies. I mean, and you certainly know much more about this than I do. You've written a number of articles about it, about, you know, covering the subject for American Free Press, and you've written about it from a historical perspective in a number of your books, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. And we can get into those topics in just a moment. But, you know, after the election, my thoughts were that, you know, perhaps the Republican controlled state legislatures in some of these swing states could actually elect pro-Trump delegates to the Electoral College. That didn't appear to happen. Although I did see some articles saying that there were like alternative electors in some states. So I think that's still kind of playing out. But ultimately, I don't think that's going to go anywhere, at least from what I've seen. You know, we've seen how the Supreme Court really hasn't been able to give Trump a victory or help him out in any way. And of course, the media is you know, saying anybody that's questioning the election results is a conspiracy theorist. There's no, you know, it's a baseless conspiracy theory that there's any sort of voter fraud. You know, we went from,
no evidence.
Yeah, the previous election, it was nothing but, you know, Russia interfered with the election and stole it from Clinton and you know, helped Trump get into office, to now, you know, American elections are 100% secure. There's nothing to see here. Anybody making these sorts of allegations is a kooky conspiracy theorist. And there was even reports that some of the Democrats wouldn't even allow Republican Congress members to sit because they were questioning the, you know, the legitimacy of American elections. So talk about a 180. I mean, we went from nothing but, you know, Russian interference to basically the total inversion of that, to where, you know, America is a pillar of democracy and nothing ever, you know, went wrong in any of our elections. It's pretty astonishing. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like the Trump administration is really getting anywhere with any of these lawsuits. You know, they did a number of hearings in front of various state legislatures where they were interviewing witnesses and having witnesses testify, exposing voter fraud, exposing some of the irregularities, and my opinion, and it seems pretty clear that there was some criminal activity involved in a lot of this stuff. And it was very compelling. It was very interesting. But, it, you know, again, it really didn't go anywhere, did it?
No. And I think this, John, it illustrates my main message all the time. And that is that we are I don't know if any nation has ever been more corrupt than present-day America is. And again, that's – I get all – the greatest – okay, I understand we brag all the time we're the greatest country. I don't think we can say that at this point. I don't know who the greatest country is or if there is a great country. But to continually just keep saying because of tradition or whatever that we're the greatest, that's long gone. What we have now is a huge mess. We have the world's wealthiest banana republic. Our infrastructure is absolute third world. We have before we had corruption. I've written about it, you know, going back to, you know, obviously to the days of the American Revolution. We've always had corruption, but we had competence. Our leaders were competent, at least even, you know, 50 years ago, there was competence there. Even the most, you know, corrupt person you could find, at least they could make the mechanism work. And the people didn't really there was no such thing as rolling power outages or if it snowed, the streets got plowed. Now you have monumental incompetence, and you can see it. The one good thing about the riots and the protests this summer has been it's brought all these roaches out in the light, these awful people that the people are have to suffer under in the cities, especially, you know, the Gavin Newsoms of the world, the Lori Lightfoots, people like that. These are cretins, the crazy dynamic female duo in Michigan with Gretchen Whitmer and the crazed attorney general that believes in free speech about as much as Joseph Stalin did. These people are horrible, but they're also incredibly incompetent. So they just let you know, hey, you know, we're gonna have expect power outages. Like what are you talking about?
Yeah,
that kind of, and it's well, and people accept that.
Well, and it's yeah, you're right. It's not only incompetence. It's also most politicians, and I mean, this has certainly been the case in my lifetime, but probably going back, you know, 50 or 60 years at this point, there is a total lack of virtue. There is a total lack of integrity amongst any of these people, certainly at the highest levels. I mean, you may be able to find one or two, a guy like Ron Paul, for example, maybe Tulsi Gabbard, although I just learned recently that she was, what was she involved in, like, was it the Council of Foreign Relations some globalist organization that I had no idea about until I just found out about recently. But anyways, my point is that by and large, almost to a man or woman, these people running our government at the local level, at the state level, certainly at the federal level, these people are that they lack all virtue. They have no dignity. They have no honesty. They have no integrity. In many cases, they are outright malicious and hostile to the interests of the people. And they're the biggest hypocrites. They're the biggest scumbags out there. And they have no shame. They are brazen in their criminality and their double standards and hypocrisy. and they treat people as if they were idiots, and they've been doing it for a very long time. And sadly, you know, a lot of people don't seem to recognize this. You're absolutely right. Our country is a total disgrace. It's not the greatest country in the world. It hasn't been. And for a very long time, we've been on the wrong side of history, wrong side of major military conflicts, going back to World War I, World War II, I mean, even probably even before that. The Civil War, I think, was an incredibly unjust war.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, we have a very despicable and corrupt and, you know, brazenly so, ruling class. I mean, these people are not hiding their corruption and their criminality.
No, they're not. And again, I think that's why, you know, again, I've postulated many times, I think Trump is an actor. I think he was selected for a role, and I think he was they propped up the populist rhetoric, which a lot of us, including me, loved. It was really refreshing, and I thought, well, you know, I don't necessarily think this could be real, but, you know, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, so let's roll the dice. Who knows? Let's hope it is.
Right.
But didn't turn out to be that way. But even if he's just a sincere, naive fool, whatever, you know, whatever you want to say, that he just somehow doesn't know who the William Barrs and John Boltons and the Nikki Haleys of the world are, you know, somehow. So he can't, you know, keeps getting fooled over and over again. But even if that's the case, then he's finding out now if there's any sincerity that he's really trying to, you know, or if it's just all ego or if it's all just a show or script. You're finding out that every part, again, that the system is so corrupt. I've said this many times before, from dog catcher on up at every level. You know, go to your local school board, try to talk to them. You see how many people have been thrown out of school board meetings just for trying to say something that they don't like. They'll bring the police power in and throw you out. So you don't even have your say at that level. So obviously up into the national representatives, who clearly don't, you know, that we, one of the two main reasons we fought the war for independence were, one, we didn't believe in taxation without representation. Now, anybody that believes your representatives represent you, they certainly tax you. You're being very naive. You have no representation. If you unless you have a great deal of wealth or influence, you have no representation whatsoever. Affluence means influence, and very few Americans have affluence these days. And the other great driving force behind the American Revolution was the idea of the consent of the governed, that all people everywhere have a right to consent to those who govern. It was a revolutionary concept. I mean, this was, wow, this, and that's what made the American government so wonderful. Said, hey, you know, again, Thomas Jefferson, especially, who's my favorite statesman, you know, said all these great comments about any time the Americans grow tired of, or, you know, if you guys grow tired of this government, you have a right to alter or abolish it. They talked about this over and over again. And yet, what happened? 90 years later, 13 Southern states wanted to secede from the Union because they no longer consented. Clearly, the exact same thing we had done in declaring an independent country. Abraham Lincoln, the first real tyrant we had, the first imperial president, he changed forever the focus of this country. And that's why he's the secular saint and why so many bad things go back to him. Because, you know, the people, and they equate him with Washington and Jefferson, which is nonsense. He hated the founding fathers. He especially hated Jefferson. And they would have hated him. They would have all fought on the side of the Confederacy. But, you know, people are fooled into thinking that he's, you know, he's right there. On Mount Rushmore, you know, with the founding fathers and so forth. Well, he's not. And because of the way that war, that needless war was waged, where nearly a million Americans died needlessly, senselessly, the concept of the consent of the governed was forever crushed. Because he let the Americans know, hey, no, this is not a voluntary union. And you do not have a right to consent to those who govern you. So that's why the talk about secession now that you're hearing is doomed to fail, because just imagine what this government that was then. The central government was in its infancy, but they still, they were far too powerful. They had way too many men and weapons for the southern states. They were outnumbered and outgunned. Now, just imagine if a group of renegade, you can have all the weapons you want, you know, but you cannot possibly deal with the power of the American military. We've created the biggest defense system the world has ever seen. They have unimaginable weapons they could use on the people. So I think it's foolish. I think it is the only answer. Because right now, we're completely divided. And although there are people like me, like I was discussing this on a show the other night, and we're talking about, you know, dividing up into red and blue areas. Well, that's fine. But there are people like me that I probably wouldn't be happy in either area. I kind of want a purple area. So I want something different. And I don't know if there would be an independent area for the people in the very small minority like me that are real independent thinkers, civil libertarians. There aren't many of us left. But they do have to – you have to – because right now, the red and the blue, it's such a split, and it's just squabbling. And you mentioned about, the Russia thing and all that. Because of this – and that's what Trump has brought back, unfortunately, and again, why I think it was a plan. Because that independent movement that appealed to the – you know, all the Bernie Sanders followers and, of course, the Trump followers, that was a populist – feeling out in the country that, you know, we don't like this elite. We know there's a corrupt elite, drain the swamp, all that. Or in Bernie Sanders' case, the wealth is all concentrated into a few hands. Everyone understands these are truths and that the people that run things, nothing ever gets done. The wealth keeps getting consolidated in fewer and fewer hands. No one ever goes to prison that's powerful. The swamp never gets drained. The wars never end, all that kind of stuff. The Fed never gets audited. But because Trump, with his personality, when he took over, all the issues that we talk, all these great issues about ending the wars and doing something about immigration, all that stuff is lost down, is going to go down the memory hole now because the populist movement has been killed. The independent movement has been killed because so many millions of people, 70, 75 millions or whatever, still stand behind Donald Trump. They think he's the answer. And they don't care that he does nothing. They'll go to his rallies and still cheer, lock her up, even though he told them right after he was elected, we don't need that anymore. She's good people. They don't care. They're still chanting drain the swamp when he hasn't done it. They think A.G. Barr was going to – and then, of course, they believe all the QAnon nonsense. So those people are tied into that what Alex Jones in his Better Days used to call the fake left-right paradigm, the phony left-right paradigm. The left-right paradigm has never been stronger, and it's because of Trump. He's the dividing line. That blue side are the people that hate his personality and want him to go away. And they're all woke now, so they have all these horrible things that might be planned for us that we might have to live through. And the red side, they're right behind Trump. He's the guy. Everything's fake news, which it is. But, it doesn't matter that if he decides to bomb Iran, that's cool. You know, they need it. Hey, you see what Trump did? And they'll just cheer his latest tweet. So where's the independent movement? There are people like me that are sitting out here kind of alone in the corner. And there's, we can't get a few people behind us because everybody wants to argue about this. And so I'm rooting for, I don't think because Trump was cheated. There's always monumental fraud in the elections. This year it was particularly egregious. And I think it was kind of purposely made to be exposed this way because they like to advertise their crimes. Going back to the JFK assassination, they planted a bullet that looked like it hadn't hit anybody. You know, these are sophisticated conspirators. You know, you plant a bullet that looks like it hit something. They want you to know the magic passport of 9/11 that showed up on the rubble. They leave these calling cards. And I think the obvious fraud here, it's so obvious. I mean, people, there's no evidence. You got like 1,000 witnesses that have signed sworn affidavits. That's not evidence. I don't know. The videotapes of, somebody, tampering with a ballot 6 times or people getting thrown out of polling places, windows getting taped up, all these stuff, ballots arriving 100,000, 200,000 in the middle of the night. There's so much evidence. But this shows that you cannot get past that monolithic corruption. What courtroom are you going to go to? A couple of the courtrooms that have rejected the Trump campaign's pleas were Trump appointees. The system is utterly corrupt. Yeah, I mean, you can't. I don't know what the answer is, John, because I mean, the answer is another revolution. But the problem is, the only way you're going to overthrow them is that way, but you need millions and millions of people to come together, and you just can't get them to do it. They're not going to come together. Even if you could get, maybe if you could get even half the Trump people that voted for Trump to come together and march on Washington, yeah, they'd have to pay attention to that. But I mean, how practical is that? People from all across the country would have to leave their jobs. I mean, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. And so it's very sad because I don't know. And of course, that state controlled media, by writing for the American Free Press, you know, if we had more outlets like that, the people, especially have one television network with shows on it, where we could talk about these kinds of things, people would have their eyes open, but we don't have that. Instead, you have just the state-controlled media, and they just keep screaming no evidence. And, you know, people, even most of the Trump people are now just resigned. Oh, well, you know, let's wait till 2024, and then it's going to be 4 more years of him holding ridiculous rallies and tweeting about how, you know, they robbed us last time, I'm the real president. And then it's just, you know, it's the... It's nobody going to, the white hats that QAnon talk about just aren't out there. I wish they were, but they're not.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I do want to talk about QAnon. I wrote a piece for American Free Press, and not the most recently published issue, which was just last week, but it would have been the issue before that. So it's been a couple weeks. And I think, let me see. Yeah, it actually is online. I have it on my website. And I was kind of just highlighting the fact that the QAnon movement in general, people that, you know, sort of are sympathetic to that worldview have been censored and banned by a number of social media outlets, including YouTube and Facebook and you know, other popular alternative media platforms. And kind of just laying out the basic tenets of QAnon, what the movement's all about, what they allege. And essentially, it's this, you know, Q is supposed to be this anonymous military intelligence insider that's leaking like cryptic messages, exposing, you know, what's really going on, exposing how Trump, you know, is aware of all this, and he's, you know, working behind the scenes to basically take down the deep state and arrest these criminals at the highest levels of power. So it's a pretty interesting phenomenon, something that I've sort of been interested in and not necessarily endorsed or supported, but just found to be interesting, worth considering, certainly. Sure. And there's one alternative independent journalist and author named Mike King, whose website is the Real History Channel, realhistorychan.com. He used to maintain a website called The Great Tomato Bubble, and he's written a number of books. He's a great writer, a great author. He's written a lot of conspiracy related books, historical revisionist type books. And he's got a good take on a lot of topics, and he's always supported this idea of QAnon being like an actual legitimate whistleblower or military intelligence insider. And I just read one of his posts that he released just yesterday, it was, and the title of it is Trump Ain't Leaving. So he's basically, yeah, so, and you know, it's interesting. I mean, I'd like to think it's true. I'd like to think that there's something behind this, but you know, you just, how long are we going to wait before we actually see anything? And one of the things that he points to, he highlights it here in this article, and it's something that you mentioned previously, this September 2018 executive order on imposing certain sanctions in the event of foreign influence in a United States election. And basically it says that there's like, I think it's the Director of National Intelligence has 45 days within an election to complete a report, you know, assessing if there was foreign influence. And if you look at, like, for example, what Sidney Powell is alleging, Lynn Wood is alleging, they're basically saying that this conspiracy to manipulate, you know, vote tabulations through Dominion and some of these other software programs goes to back to Venezuela, goes to other countries, you know, China, for example. So it's like an international conspiracy, essentially. And, you know, the Q supporters, you know, sort of tie that in there. And they also point to how Trump has sort of cleaned house at the Pentagon and gotten rid of a number of people. And they see, like, certain individuals, like a guy, John Ratcliffe, as being sort of, they call him white hats.
White hats,
White hats. So basically, like, insiders that are the good guys, basically, within the deep state, working to expose the deep state and bring the actual criminals to justice. So, again, it's interesting. And their main point, the main point that he was making in this recent article that I read and tweeted out is that really the only way to clean this mess up is through the military, an idea which you sort of seem skeptical of based on some of your previous comments just earlier in this conversation. And, you know, I share that. I think you're right. I think the, you know, the rank and file guys within the military are certainly Trump supporters, and maybe even people in leadership positions. But at the top level, I mean, these people are totally hostile to Trump. I mean, we just saw General Mathis, you know, Mad Dog Mathis.
Yes.
A guy who Trump himself appointed, by the way,
exactly.
in his own administration. He was out there saying that, you know, America, this idea of America first needs to come to an end, and it's, you know, it's a bad deal for America.
Yeah,
I mean, how can, imagine trying to spin America first as, like, bad for America. I mean, give
as
me
a general.
Break.
Yeah,
yeah, as a general, exactly.
So what are you defending then? You're supposed to be the part of the defense, that national defense, isn't that what we call it? But, you know, I think that, you know, when we, you talk about QAnon, most of all these, the big platforms you mentioned that were all taken off of YouTube, those were all shows that I'm friends with those shows. I know what their audience, and I've always said, look, I just questioning this stuff because it's not that I don't want it. I love the idea of having a patriotic elite behind the scenes in the military, and you know that are working to try to undermine and overcome the corruption. It's a wonderful concept. I love it, and that's why it appeals to me. And people want hope. That's why there's still hope for Trump. They want white hats because we don't see any. We know the bad guys are everywhere. Where are the good guys? Can we have someone ride to our rescue? Well, the problem is, all those shows, SGT Report, Dustin Nemo, Sarah Westall, Red Pill, 70, these shows, I was on them many times. I love them. They're friends of mine. But and most of them behind the scenes are, you know, skeptical of QAnon as well. But they understand, you know, when you have 700,000 subscribers like SGT Report, you know, and almost all of them are really, really into QAnon, you got to be careful what you say. You don't want to lose your audience. So you don't want to make fun of it. But at some point, because what these Q drafts would be, there were so many predictions and dates and things that were going to happen and over again. And none of them ever happened. None of them. So, you know, is it going to happen now? I don't know. You know, you have Steve Pachenik, who I like a lot. And he's a very fascinating character. But again, he's got a very deep state background, which he admits. But he came on Alex Jones. I think it was actually Owen Schroyer. But I guess it was a week or so after the election, and claimed, and it, you know, that there was a sting operation run by Homeland Security, and that they had watermarked all the ballots, and so it was going to be very easy. They were going to come in and prove that these phony ballots were there because they didn't have the seal on it, they didn't have the watermark on it. So I mean, again, it sounded very Q-ish to me, but that would certainly be a way. That'd be evidence. But you haven't heard anymore. And he's been on Alex Jones a few more times. And Alex is, you know, even like kind of, come on, what about, and he can't, he just keeps saying, wait, like I say, look, Homeland Security, the director of Homeland Security came out and said there was no evidence of vote fraud. So, like everybody has. So if they're running a sting operation again, what are they waiting for? What is Trump waiting for with this executive order? I mean, at what point are you going to see, you know, this trust the plan thing? How long are you? I mean, the 4 years are literally almost up. He only has a few weeks left. So, you know, to say we have to January 10th, as somebody told me the other day, it's like, okay, well, you know, but why are you waiting to the last minute? I mean, you know, it's like, don't you want to have a little leeway there? And oh, well, Trump, and I, you know, they all say the same. Well, yeah, he's not leaving. Biden will never be in the office. And they're so confident. And it's like, and because Trump is kind of, look, he knows something. It's like, you know, he's playing 8,000 degree chess. Like, I would love to think that, but I just don't see any evidence of it. And I think, you know, when Biden gets inaugurated, you know, which I can't believe won't happen again. I don't want it to happen, but I don't see how it's going to be stopped at this point because, I think the Supreme Court was his only route. And it looks like I don't even know if he's going to be able to get anything else before the Supreme Court. We'll see. But I mean, at this point, I think that people have to realize that whatever, you know, whether QAnon was an elaborate intelligence operation, which a lot of people think, or it was just, you know, maybe some online people playing a game or something. I don't know. Maybe there are people there. You know, there has to be people behind the scenes in the military that don't like what's going on. But again, you have to have organization. So, and the military, especially, these guys spend their whole careers, their whole mindset is following orders. So if you know that all the your commanding officer above you is not on the same page with you, I mean, you're gonna have to go against your entire personality that has been changed since you've been in the military to go with something. And again, you're gonna have to hope that all the other people have your back. And that's with anything, John. That any kind of rebellion or anything, you have to. There's power in numbers. So you would need all those rank and file. Yeah, if they all ran up together, they're the ones that would be shooting the guns. If they all rose together, just like if the people did, of course, Orwell talked about the proles. He talked many times in Oceania, they outnumbered the inner party, thousands to one, just as we do. But they could never come together. And he talked about them getting distracted by sports and the lottery and drinking and all that, which is exactly what you see today. We're distracted by these petty little squabbles and by political personalities. And Trump is the personality that is really everyone is divided over his personality. That's why people, and I'm fond of saying, the people that hate Trump hate him over things he's never done. And the people that love him over things he's never done.
Boy, that's so true, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's very true. Well, and see, that's the thing, like, going back to when he first, came onto the political scene as a candidate, I was very inspired by him. He was saying a lot of good things, and I've really tried my best to be objective about the situation. And I mean, frankly, he's been a huge disappointment. I'd like to get into his legacy, assuming he doesn't get into office for the second term. Real quick, before we do that, though, I'm curious, what are your thoughts? I want to bring up two other topics. What are your thoughts on the whole Stop the Steal movement that's been organizing protests and rallies across the country, raising money, many claim quite dubiously. And a lot of people are alleging that a lot of this money is actually going to pay the debt of the Trump campaign and, lining the pockets of some very suspicious and shady individuals. So I'm curious, what's your thought on the whole movement? Have you been following some of these rallies?
Oh yeah, well I was at a rally because I live outside Washington D.C. So my son is he's still a very big Trump supporter, and so he was going to, and he said, "Come on, dude." I said, "Okay, well this will be fun." So we went to the Stop the Steal, and I'm sitting there again. Everybody's holding their Trump flags, and I I'm a Trump agnostic, the smallest minority group in the country. I want him to succeed, but I don't support, the 8,000 degree test and all that nonsense, and I can't support, the promises he's broken and the disappointments and so forth. But it was a huge crowd. I mean, there were many, many thousands. I don't know how many, but we saw General Flynn speak. We saw Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, speak. And Alex Jones finally, because that's who we wanted to see. I wanted to meet him since he was there. But he was too hard to find. And clearly, again, you can see this is the problem, is that rally was being run by more mainstream conservative, very, very religious. There's a big religious aspect to it, including there was a lot of Christianity talk there, but there was also a couple of rabbis, including one from Israel.
And wow, really? This is the one in D.C. this past weekend.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting.
And I told my son, I said, this is too religious for me, especially I don't know why somebody from Israel is here. And but again, I understand Trump has been very good to his one. He has not broken his promises to Israel, that's for sure. So I understand why they love him. But
yeah. The one area that he has actually fulfilled all of his promises and then some has been to Israel and the organized Jewish community. I mean, how many Jewish criminals has he pardoned over the course of his administration? I mean, it's disgraceful.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it was I just thought, I said, I think they would be better served concentrating more. I was hoping to hear the speakers talk about the the evidence about the drops of 100,000, 200,000 ballots in the middle of the night, all the dead people voting, the backdating of mail-in ballots, not verifying signatures, all the stuff that we know happened. The skinny Joey, the Philadelphia mob boss that said, "Hey, we delivered 300,000 ballots for Biden," and said, "Hey, I'll I'll tell everything if Trump just pardons me. Heard no more about it. And I posted it on Facebook or something and said it was fake news. How is it fake news? It's I mean, he may be lying, but that's what he's saying. So, you know, it's not that. So I was hoping they'd do that. But then it didn't look like, because I kept saying, Alex Jones is not going to fit in with these people. But somehow he ended up speaking there. And I think that he was, but it, again, it shows how even in this, all these people that are against the steal, they can't come together because the Alex Jones group was, that's the conspiracy crowd. And these mainstream conservatives, they don't want anything to do with us. So they wanted to keep, but he had by far the fans that were there. I mean, that's who I went to see. Most of them were there for him. So much more than, you know, they're not coming to see even General Flynn, or certainly not Mike Lindell, my pillow guy. But so.
You know, I watched his speech and I noticed that it was almost like he kind of had to bully his way up onto the stage. I mean, he was ultimately invited up there, but, you know, he was really sort of forcing the issue, it seemed like, kind of behind the scenes. And then he got up there and, you know, he's a total showman. I mean, I have sort of mixed feelings about Alex Jones. Yeah. I mean, I kind of, when I first woke up, so to speak, and, you know, was researching 9/11, he's, of course, like the first radio personality you come across. Yeah. And he, you know, he's done some good work. Don't get me wrong. And he's right about a lot of what he says.
Yes.
Also, that should be pointed out. But he's also wrong about a lot of things that he says. And he doesn't, I don't think he really gives you the full story of what's really going on, what we're really confronting, what we're really up against. But overall, I mean, he has a ton of support. I mean, I generally support him. I mean, I don't want to see him silenced, certainly. I mean, he's been shut down left and right by pretty much every single major platform. So I totally support his free speech rights. And I think he, you know, puts on a good show. He has a lot of good points to make. He's just a bit bombastic and sort of, I mean, you know, as anybody in that sort of position, I guess, would be sort of, you know, egotistical to a certain extent.
Yeah, and he's a showman, you're right. And he, if you looked at some behind the scenes video that some people posted, clearly Owen Schroyer was even saying, like, you know, they didn't want us here, and you know they didn't. And there was an altercation between him and Flynn, General Flynn, where Alex said something like, "Are you scared?" or patted him on the back and got Flynn all pissed off and said, "What'd you say to me?" So, and he probably, that's, you know, because what he does, he likes to make, you know, confrontational videos and so forth. But it's, and again, it shows. That, and there was another group there, the Women for Trump or something, and Millie Weaver, you know, his old reporter, who is broken with him now over Roger Stone or something, but she was there and they were drowning her out, and I felt sorry for her. It's you know, there again, we can't come together, you know, and that's the problem, is that you needed, all those people were there, but there was still infighting, and I see this, you know, in, you know, going back to when I was first involved in the JFK assassination research, that community is incredibly fractured, always has been. They can't come together. The 9/11 truther community or whatever, I mean, you talk about, I mean, again, you have all different factions. There were no planes, there were holograms, and they all hate each other. They all fight with each other.
I was just going to say, my experience in the 9/11 conspiracy movement, and you know me, I'm interested in all of it. I'm like, look, we can talk about it. I might not agree with you, but... Yeah. But no, it doesn't work that way, as you quickly find out. People want to accuse you of this or accuse you of that, or, you know, it's really sort of like a gossipy, like, high school drama club or something. It's pretty, you know, immature and sort of childish at the end of the day.
And the JFK assassination research community, 9/11, this Stop the Steal, anything, all those movements are riddled with, there are undercover agents there. They all are. I mean, I talked in Hidden History about, you know, this goes back to the 60s when the CIA and the FBI and even local police infiltrated the Black Panthers and the Ku Klux Klan. They're all over the place. They're on both ends of the political spectrum. They don't let any movement. That's why, you know, Alex Jones, again, in his better days, used to refer to Al-Qaeda as Al-CIA-da. And that's what it was. They create these things. They manipulate these things. So if there's a popular, and that's another reason why it's going to be hard to ever take these tyrants out, because you're going to have any kind of movement that does, you know, organically grow, even if it gets into the millions, you're going to have a bunch of undercover agents in there, and they're going to be the most compelling. They're going to be Alex Jones type personalities that will try to take over. and divert, you know, to try to steer you maybe in the wrong direction. And so that's the problem that we have. And so it's, I would like to have some hope, but the saddest thing is that because of this crazy lockdown, I was writing about this today, is that, you know, I used to think it was just Americans had just gotten so dumbed down and we're just incredibly stupid. We're an idiocracy, which we are. But the lockdown shows that this is a worldwide problem, that there doesn't appear to be any intelligent countries left because they've all bought this nonsense.
Yeah.
They're all, yep. I mean, so. Yeah,
well, that's really the big takeaway from not only the election, but also just the whole COVID-19 scamdemic.
Yep.
Is that this deep state that we hear so much about, it's global in nature, and it's basically, see, this idea of like the New World Order, it's already fully in place, and we see that with this response to yep. COVID. I mean, it may yep. not be like, you know, fully institutionalized, but I mean, all the power networks are all on the same page. Yep. You know, all the key players they have the right associations, they've been vetted by the right people. And by the right people, I mean like the, you know, the global deep state actors, essentially. So,
yeah.
I mean, everybody's on the same page with this. And that's really come to light in the past year. And at the end of the day, and, you know, we can kind of wrap up with this because I'm sure this will take some time. Well, actually, you know what? I got to get your take on Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood versus Giuliani and Trump's legal team. I mean, there was at the beginning, you know, Trump was almost, you know, implying, and Sidney Powell is out there doing press conferences with Giuliani and what's the lady's name? I forget her name off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, Jenna Ellis, I think.
There you go. Yeah, Jenna Ellis. And then the Trump legal team, Giuliani and Ellis, officially distances themselves from Powell and said, look, she's not associated with us in any official capacity. Right. So Powell and Lynn Wood have become kind of the scapegoats. And, you know, Trump was even referring to them in that rally in Georgia where he was imploring all the Republicans to go vote in these elections, which he's been saying have been corrupted from the beginning. I mean, it makes no sense.
Exactly.
So what is your
take on
Powell and Wood?
Well, again, you know, one of my good friends is Kevin Shipp. He's a CIA whistleblower. He's got a pretty big name in the conspiracy community now. I went to elementary school with him, actually. We didn't see each other for decades, but now we've ended up in the same place down the same rabbit holes. But I was talking to him a couple weeks ago, and he does not like Sidney Powell. He doesn't trust her at all. And I'm not sure why. And Tucker Carlson, you see, really stopped covering the voter fraud stuff on Fox after he had that little tiff, which I think it was kind of unfair of him to demand evidence from her on TV when, you know, that's what she's supposed to be presenting to the courts. But again, that's the kind of rifts you get in these. They don't come together to try to oppose the tyranny. We have to be a united force. But Lynn Wood, I respect him in many ways. He's done a great job with Nicholas Sammon. The Kentucky teenager. I've had Todd McMurtry on my radio show, I Protest, who is the other lawyer for Nicholas Sammon. I admire him from his Richard Jewell days, you know, and he cleared Richard Jewell's name. He was involved in a Jeffrey McDonald. He was involved in a lot of cases, and he's offered his services for Kyle Rittenhouse, who's certainly an unpopular figure. So, I wrote an article for American Free Press last issue about him, and where I think they call him he's almost like a Perry Mason, but he takes on these cases that other people won't. So I have great respect for him, but he also, I don't understand his comment about, because I don't believe that he is right in the fact that the electoral process is still corrupted, but I think it's foolish to say, you know, don't vote in that. Again, they're probably not counting the votes anyhow, but I think to say that, I understand Trump's frustration there because then you're basically giving the Senate to the Democrats. And again, I don't think the Democrats are really any different than the Republicans, but at this point, they scare me a lot more because of the woke stuff. So I think they could be more dangerous. The Republicans are still what we used to call the stupid party. I used to call them the stupid party, and the Democrats the evil party. So you had a choice between stupid and evil. But the stupid party is still really stupid, and the Democrats are still really evil. But the stupid party continues to focus on, well, they're not apologizing for things and claiming I'm not a racist. their entire agenda is based around how can we continue to cut corporate taxes or cut taxes on the 1%, the wealthy. That's their entire agenda. They have no other agenda, really. And so it's basically tax cutting. So they don't offer it, but that's not as scary as, talking about maybe truth and reconciliation committees, which the woke left is talking about, the South African style, giving land away and things like that. These are
ending scary. The First Amendment, criminalizing hate speech, criminalizing, quote unquote, Holocaust denial and racism and, that sort of thing. Yeah. Oh, I hear you. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the only reason I think both of those Republicans are horrible candidates. But, the Democrats, those two Democratic candidates are a little scarier. So I don't think it presents a united front. But I understand what Linwood is saying in one sense is that the process is still corrupted. But if you carry that to the extent, then no Republican, they just wouldn't vote at all, which may be the solution. I don't know. But this, if we can't. I thought, much as I thought at the beginning of this lockdown, I thought that they had overplayed their hand. And I thought, you're canceling sports, you're canceling movies, shopping malls, restaurants, schools, extracurricular activities. This is just going to be too much for people because all the normies are going to be affected by this. It's not going to be the conspiracy people. But boy, they they adapted to it and they're perfectly cool with it. But I thought that when they did what they did with this incredibly obvious voter fraud, and they pissed off the 70-some million people that voted for Trump, virtually all of those 70-some million believe there was voter fraud. That's a huge – that you're not going to find any of the conspiracy theory that many people believe in. So you're going to have a hard time convincing them, especially when they're not acknowledging that there's any fraud. So you're not going to, that's why the Georgia elections are ridiculous, because they haven't changed a thing about the process. And they're inviting people they have residency requirements. It doesn't matter. These people on the woke left, they don't care about anything. Yes, come on in and vote. What about the residency requirement? And nobody's there to question them. The other side, the Republicans, the cucked out Republicans are just standing there and stuttering, "Don't call me a racist." That's their entire thing. And so there's no opposition to these people. So, but I thought maybe they had overplayed their hand with getting 70-some million people upset. But unfortunately, it's not the 70 million that, whatever on the other side. If you got them upset because they have Soros and they have the financing behind Black Lives Matters and all these groups, so they can raise a furor, and they would. But on the right, there are, the Koch brothers who are there. They're not the same groups. They don't have where they can make these huge protests and huge violent demonstrations. And if they did, the media is not on their side and they would, cover it differently. But I think, unfortunately, that this is just going to quietly go away. Trump will eventually just walk away with his tail between his legs, or maybe be kicking and screaming. I don't know. But and I think that the establishment won't acknowledge. I mean, basically, election officials are saying there was no electoral fraud. Well, if it was fraud, you would be the ones committing it. So I don't think we should be asking you. But who's going to investigate? I mean, Trump, I think the best thing he could do would be to and if he just doesn't have time, then he's not going to do it because Trump just tweets. He could find a real special prosecutor, even Giuliani, who I don't trust Giuliani at all. But he appears like he's the real deal on this issue. Somebody like that, you appoint as a special prosecutor, and you quickly start questioning all these people. You try to go after them with what remaining time you have. But Trump is clearly not going to do that. He's golfing still constantly, and he's
golfing, and he's promoting the vaccine. That's basically what he's been doing lately. Yeah.
Yes.
So I agree. Well, and that kind of leads me to the final topic that we can discuss here before we wrap up. And that's really the legacy of Trump. I mean, assuming he's not going to get in for a second term, which looks pretty likely at this point. I mean, we've talked about how polarizing he was. I mean, even going back to Obama, Obama was an incredibly polarizing president as well. Trump probably, in my opinion, is even more polarizing. I mean, as you said, you know, people either love him or they hate him, not for anything that he's done or said. So, just, you know, basically strictly his personality and in his optics and his rhetoric, I guess. So, you know, he's, again, he's incredibly polarizing. He's basically, I mean, like, objectively speaking, he's been a huge disappointment. You know, he ran on this incredible America First populist agenda, you know, back in 2016, build a wall, deport illegal aliens, you know, end DACA, you know, bring back business, you know, get us out of these disastrous trade deals, which I guess maybe you could make an argument that he made some progress there. Yes. But overall, I think his agenda, like, at least the main points that he ran on, you know, he's failed to accomplish anything. And again, you know, he was stymied and hindered by the entire political establishment. But at the end of the day, he failed largely to accomplish many of his own, you know, openly stated goals. He appointed people to his administration that were openly hostile to his agenda. He was, as you commented earlier, he was the, you know, the tweeter in chief rather than a real leader. You know, literally America is burning. And, you know, major cities are being looted, there's riots, there's widespread violence and criminality, and President Trump is on Twitter tweeting, law and order. Give me, as the president, I mean, give me a break. So, you know, he presided over that, he presided over the COVID scam, the COVID lockdowns, you know, the rollout of this vaccination agenda, when he could have exposed all of this and said, look, we're not going along with this, this is clearly a globalist, technocratic New World Order agenda that they've been promoting for decades. So, I mean, that's in my view, basically his, at least the negative aspects of his presidency. There's some positive aspects that we could look at, but let me get your take.
Yeah, well, I think that certainly his legacy in the terms, as long as if the establishment remains in power, which I don't see that they won't, because nobody's doing anything about it. The paroles are just sitting there and arguing. They're not going to overthrow them, but then certainly they're going to judge him harshly. I think the court historians that lie about everything, and I mean everything, are going to say he's the worst president ever. I'm sure that he will be considered the worst president in American history. I can almost guarantee that. With the establishment. Now, the other side, he may continue to be a popular figure. I mean, he's 74. And the one thing I can say about the guy has supernatural energy. For 74 years old and being pretty overweight, it is amazing the energy. You look at your average 74-year-old, it's astonishing.
And you know what? He looks like he hasn't aged a day since he's been in office. He still looks pretty good. I mean,
yeah, he does. I mean, so I would give him that. So he's the energy, and I think that's one of the reasons he appeals to people too, because he is so energetic. I mean, you know, he was holding like 5-6 rallies a day, you know, in different parts of the country. I mean, that would take its toll on a 24-year-old, let alone a 74-year-old. It's amazing. But so I'll give him credit for that, and I will give him credit for a couple things. One is he has, even though he hasn't done anything, he has exposed the extent of the corruption. He has shown how many roaches were in the attorney. And so people now, even though, but again, he's only exposed it to the people that are awake, so like us, you know, hopefully we're awake. But so we were sort of like, wow, you know, and with the lockdown, the Lori Lightfoots and all these people coming out of the shadows, where it's like, wow, you know, these are the people running the cities. No wonder they're in the shape they're in. So, and just the fake news thing. It's great because so many people, although unfortunately it's used against him too. So everybody now, you know, in one way it's great because everybody realizes the news is a joke. But in the other way, it's used by the establishment to say, you know, anything that's conspiratorial is fake too. So I think he raised, and certainly the issues raised were great, but I voted for him almost exclusively because of immigration, because I think that's one of the most important issues, and no one was talking about it. But
yep, me too, exactly. Immigration and his open denunciation of political correctness, and you know, calling out the media. That's exactly why I voted for him, and that's why I voted for him the second time around. You know, this past election.
Not because
I held out any hope that he was this. I certainly hoped he was genuine, but I mean, it didn't appear to be very likely. But just for that fact alone, and that to me is actually huge. I mean, just the fact that he has discredited the mainstream mass media in the eyes right. of millions of American people. As you mentioned, the 74 million people or whatever the number is that voted for him, I mean, yeah. they're basically what the mainstream would describe as conspiracy theorists now.
Yeah.
You know, they
yeah.
question and the media. They question the legitimacy of the last election. They
yeah,
question many other things. I mean, he's definitely got people thinking, although I think sort of a negative aspect is he's renewed this false hope in the political system via Trumpism, via his personality, yes. via yes. His fake America First populism.
Right.
But at the same time, he's also sort of discredited the GOP because the GOP has yeah, been yeah. so. So, I mean, it's you know, it's a very nuanced subject here, I think. And, you know, either, you know, again, people either love Trump or hate him. It's a, you can't, I don't think it's really that, you know, yeah. black and white, really.
No, he's transformed politics maybe no other figure in American history, but certainly in you know, the last 50 years or whatever, there's been no other political figure like him, for good or bad. But he has unfortunately killed the independent movement because they're all or at least all those on the right, all those on the left, of course, are coalesced behind whoever the Democrats nominate too, because they hate him so much. So there's, you know, the Bernie Sanders crowd, you know, they're not voting for the Green Party or whatever. Same thing on the right. They're not voting for the Libertarians. They're all lined up behind Trump. So they're locked into that left-right paradigm because of his personality. It'd be interesting to see, and I said this for a long time, I still believe that I said at the time Trump was our last hope. I still think he's our last hope. I don't see anybody else on the horizon. And I've said many times, like, what will happen after Trump? Because the Republicans are a dead party. They were horrible before, but Trump was never really a Republican, and so most of the Republicans didn't support him. The people did, but the Republicans out there, if you're going to talk about Nikki Haley and Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush, these people, these are horrible. Mitt Romney's. They would be lucky. Any of them would be lucky to get 30% of the vote, the popular vote. There's nothing there. Trump got, by force of his personality and by a lot of the independents still that think that maybe, hopefully, he'll act on some of his rhetoric, or at least he'll stop the crazy woke Democrats. The Republicans offer nothing, so there's a void there, and I suspect, hopefully, like a new party, either a new Republican Party or some kind of Reform Party or something will rise up. But the problem is, how much damage will this wokeness and virtue signaling, especially under the cover of this never-ending lockdown, because it doesn't look like it's never going to lock down. And the people, there just aren't enough people again. But the people that Trump is kind of the opposition to this lockdown are kind of people, almost all people that support Trump. And as you noted about, you know, he's, even though 99.9% of his of the people that voted for him hate the idea of the vaccines, he's pushing it. And again, that's what he does. That's Trump. But then he'll send out a tweet in the middle of the night where he'll kind of question vaccines too. And that's what he does.
I know. And, he's so good. He's so good at it, isn't he?
Yeah, I
know it. I totally understand. Well, you know, I think ultimately at the end of the day, what he represented, whether he was genuine or not, I mean, I tend to think that a lot of what he said he believed, and he was actually genuine about it. He just, you know, couldn't follow through for whatever reason. I think that what he represented, this America First populism, the civic nationalism, you know, put America first, make America great again, this whole idea, I think that very concept scared the hell out of the establishment and the
sure.
media.
Sure.
There's no, I mean, that very clearly was the case. We saw how hysterical they were as soon as he stepped on the stage, calling
sure.
him, you know, he's the next Hitler, you know, he's a
right.
racist, blah, blah, blah. So not only that, but his open attack, all-out attack and discrediting of the media in such a bold way and in such a powerful and unflinching way. He was not backing down. He's never really backed down on a lot of this stuff. I mean, he's a very bold figure. So his attack on the media was so powerful, something that I don't think they were really anticipating. I mean, they're used to all these totally cucked out Republicans
yeah.
getting up there
yeah.
and just, oh, yeah, we're not racist. And, yeah, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
we'll play nice with the Democrats and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these two factors alone, I think, really demonstrated why the global power elite, the global deep state, the mass media, they wanted him out of the White House so desperately. I think that's why this COVID scam was rolled out, the BLM riots, and this full-on color revolution, you know, America style over the course of this past year. I think this all culminated in this. I mean, look, I mean, going back to even before he got in office, they were trying to prevent him from, you know, fully, you know, winning the election and getting in office with the with the Russia hoax and with everything else. They've been doing everything in their power to impeach him, to get him out of power. And they finally came to a point where they, I think they knew that he was going to win in a landslide. I think if he, we actually had a genuine vote, he would have won in a landslide. And I mean, you know, 90 million votes he might have gotten if you know, if it were accurately tabulated. So I think that all of these factors led to him being a target of these people. And ultimately, that's why they wanted to get rid of him. Whether he was genuine or not, he scared the hell out of them.
Absolutely. No, and so it's, you know, really, there is still a lot to be written there. Again, if he, but I suspect that if he stays healthy and he keeps up the energy, which is going to be pretty hard because he'll be 78 by the time the next election rolls around. I think he still want, and you know, if he decides, if he has to step aside for whatever reason, who's going to take, I don't think there's any Republican, I would think, it could be Donald Trump Jr. Maybe. He's the only one possibly because he has charisma too, and he's a much better speaker than his father. And he seems more sincere too. But I would think he would be the one that might fill the void there. I mean, I don't know for sure, but that would be what I'd suspect. I don't see anybody else on the horizon at all. And I don't, you know, and again, he might very well disappoint as well. But I just don't think that. We that these white hats are not out there, but Trump was our last hope, and he still, I think, ultimately is. And you know, maybe the American people will, at some point, get fed up with the lockdown, and maybe they'll refuse the mandatory vaccine, and maybe at some point they'll just take their masks off. But we have the numbers, just like Orwell's Proles did. But we have to be able to realize it, and that's the problem. I said, right. I wrote, you know, my latest blog entry. I talked about being an enemy of the state, and I Lou Rockwell published a lot of my stuff, and I talked about the analogy between being a fighter, and it's the 15th round, and you've been beaten up for 14 rounds. Your opponent's much bigger than you. The referee's against you, and the audience is packed. With people that that are on your side, your fans, they could easily jump into the ring and overpower the other fighter. That's the analogy I think we have, is that we could easily stop this, but the problem is we can't come together. And I understand, you know, it's not I you know, that's why I don't put people who said, why don't you, you know, go to rallies and stuff. So well, because I'm not going to go where there's 50 people or something. You know, I have to know there's a huge crowd because I don't want to be arrested. I don't want to be tased or shot or something. I want to know that there's somebody there that has my back. And that's what I think that most people probably feel that way. I'm not going to go risk something unless I know that there's too many people there for them. They can't kill or arrest us all. And that's the problem, is you need numbers, and we just can't get people to come together. And if we can't come together over this lockdown, I don't know. But maybe the vote thing might do it, because these Stop the Steal rallies have been big. And if they get disappointed, if this executive order doesn't work or whatever, maybe you'll finally see, you know, the thousands or maybe more storming the inauguration of Biden or something. It'd be interesting, but I think that that's the only hope that we have, that because the established, still, for whatever reason, they don't want the optics of, like, you know, crushing dissent like the Chinese did in Tiananmen Square. So I think they'd hesitate if there were enough people there, like, to really, you know, inflict damage on them. But we need that. So whether that can happen, I don't know. But we need to get the spirit of the founding fathers back.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think at the end of the day, what we ultimately need, any sort of dissident movement, anybody that's awake to what's going on, and that includes a lot of the people that supported Trump and that are out there at these rallies, we need some clarity on some of these fundamental issues. And there's just frankly not any clarity. I mean, people still are buying into this whole fake system. And until we really understand what is going on, who's calling the shots, what agenda it's serving, you know, who the key players are, what the ultimate goals are. And I mean, again, you can look at some of their own documents, some of what these people are openly saying, and this is all being exposed with this COVID scam. I mean, these people want you to be vaccinated and chipped, you know, no property, a total slave. And they're making it so obvious and so clear, you know, and people still don't get it. People still think, oh, well, you know, why is Governor Newsom or Governor Cuomo, why are they enacting these silly policies? Look, they're not silly. They're designed to take everything from you and give it to the trillionaire class that is creating this whole new world order. I mean, this is a purposeful thing here, you know, but people still don't see it. And it's a very scary, you know, dark thing, topic to contemplate and to come to grips with. But, you know, that's really the whole focus of my work over, you know, that's what led me to get started in all this. It's like, look, you know, people got to really understand what's going on. And it sucks. It's not fun to talk about, but hey, this is the real deal here. And until we can deal with this as adults, we're not getting anywhere. And that's, you know, the same place we're in right now. Although there's a lot more people paying attention and sort of open to these ideas, thanks in large measure to Trump. So,
yep. That's exactly
so
right.
I guess, yeah, we gotta kind of work with what we're given. And, you know, Trump was a very positive development in American politics. Love him or hate him, you know, whether he was genuine or not, whether he was a total failure, at the end of the day, he did open up a lot of space, and he did sort of open up the eyes of a lot of people. So let's just pray and hope that, you know, we can all kind of get on the same page and at least recognize some of these bigger agendas and do what it takes to rectify the situation. It's going to be a lot of work, no doubt about that, but we got to keep plugging away. What else can we do, right? I mean,
that's all we can do.
This is this is one lifelong struggle, and you know, I'd rather go down fighting than as a slave. I'll tell you that right now. That's my attitude. So, and I know we're fighting for the truth and for what's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what you do. You have to remember the words of Patrick Henry. Yeah.
All right, Don. Well, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me this evening. We'll have to do this again.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. All right, man. Well, you take care. I'll talk to you soon. Keep up the great writing for American Free Press.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
See you. Okay, bye.